This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne to have and share your noontime on this fabulous Willamette Valley Monday. Isn't it beautiful?
Yeah.
It's a wonderful day to live in the Mid-Valley. It's a little wet. So I understand you've been reporting on the news about all the water. It's coming down. Everyone's talking about floods. Local television stations are all in a Twitter about it. But how much danger do you think we have, Dave?
Well, we have a flood watch in effect until 5 o'clock this afternoon. 100% chance of rain all day, pretty much.
Yeah, I've been noticing that.
But you'll notice that it drops down today, or tonight, I should say, to showers, the 50% chance of showers on Tuesday. So we might even see some sun breaks tomorrow. It's possible.
So we're all Oregonians, right?
That's right.
So
well, we all if you don't have your duck feet now, you will.
For you newcomers.
you will.
The waters will continue to rise after the rain stops.
Yes.
That's the scare.
We're about, they were saying that most of the rivers, some small streams will probably flood, but a lot of the major rivers will still be probably a foot or so underneath flooding stage.
Now they're evacuating parts of Eugene.
That's, yeah, down south of us, they got a lot more rain than we did.
Oh, but that's still the Willamette.
Yeah,
okay. Wow. So more rain coming and higher water coming. I don't know. I live in the floodplain and there's no water. And
why did you buy on the floodplain again?
It seemed like a good idea at the time.
Yeah. Hopefully they put your house up on stilts
actually,
or something.
It's one of those things that, yeah, you're in the 100-year floodplain, but... You know, it didn't flood in 1996, and at least anecdotally, it didn't really flood during the Columbus Day storms in the 60s. So
you're due for it now, then.
Yeah, I'm pretty comfortable that we are never going to see water where my house sits. We'll have water on the property.
Watch it be this year.
We have there is a creek kind of thing. I don't know. It's considered a slough or connected to a slough. On the other side, it's connected. That's overflow from the local stream. So we get in heavy rainfalls, water comes to inundate, but doesn't really flood. It's just a low area of the property and it runs through, and that's fine with us. It's nature.
Okay.
So the house is up above that, so it's fine. I'm not really worried, but now I am fascinating since it's the first year at this location.
You're paying more attention
to
now.
Walk down to the actual river and see how high it is and how high it's not.
Did you put a stick in? Measurement stick?
No.
You should.
So I'm walking the dog this weekend. Hope everybody had a good weekend, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
I'm walking the dog. There's entire trees floating down the Willamette River.
What?
Right? I'm like, right in the middle of the river. It's really high and it's really fast. I'm like, that's a tree. That's not like branches and stuff. I'm like, oh, man.
Full on tree.
Something got uprooted. And now, there's news. It brings up a lot of trash as well.
So during
the same walk, I cross a creek and there's a whole bunch of like children's plastic toys and balls and things that have floated down that just got captured from someone's backyard or something like that.
Sure.
Along the way. So we do get a lot of debris and with it comes garbage that later needs picked up. But everyone, please be careful, especially if you're a pedestrian, your bike or even your travel paths go the way of high water.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So,
it should be easing up in the next day.
Yeah, we were so excited to have spring and then spring showers.
April showers bring May flowers.
All right, so this is going to be a great week on Newsmakers. Welcome, everyone, by the way. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne.
Hey.
We're going to talk about local issues. Today, we're going to kind of hit a highlight of what's in the news and things that are happening because this week we're packed full of great guests. We have tomorrow, we're going to have Lyle Mordhorst. He is the newest county commissioner for Polk County.
Mm-hmm.
So he tried to turn me down for the interview. I said no.
Really?
No, Lyle, you're coming on. He goes, well, he's only been on the job, 3 months.
Oh, wow.
So got appointed, has never held elective office. So he is drinking from the fire hose.
Deer in the headlights.
But everyone needs to know Polk County's newest, actually, it's the region's newest county commissioner. So mm-hmm. he'll be on tomorrow. So you get to know Lyle Mordhorst a little bit and his first experiences. We're also going to have a state representative. Denise Bowles is going to join us on Friday. I'm going to pull her away from the Capitol and see how she's experiencing things. I think I mentioned that. I teased that a week or so ago where I ran into her at an event and asked her how it's going, and her eyes got big and her lips get tight. It's like, it's a struggle. Like,
nice.
Something to the extent of that. So, and if you don't know, Denise Bowles recently elected as after being appointed, and as a Republican legislator that represents South Salem and extended areas. And also, Bud Pierce is going to join us this week. So that's really exciting. Previously gubernatorial candidate Bud Pierce. Maybe he wants to announce on Newsmakers that he's going to run for governor again or something. But he keeps his hands in public policy. He keeps his hand in trying to educate and influence. And, of course, he works full-time as a doctor.
True.
As
busy
an oncologist.
Guy.
So yeah. Great to have Bud Pierce on. He'll be here on Thursday. Great week for Newsmakers. All right. So there's something I want to talk about. We're going to talk this hour. We're going to talk a little bit about the state suing pharmaceutical manufacturers. A little bit about the PERS board. I want to clarify the motions. We just were able to highlight them, I think, on Friday. But there's two initiatives coming out. And we'll flesh those out a little bit about PERS reform.
Mm-hmm.
And I did look it up. I promised to look up who sits on the PERS board and
right.
how is that made up of those people who have been making these decisions for how long. But let's start with your traffic lesson you learned. Oh, we don't have time. Darn it.
Sure we do.
We do?
Yeah, we got a couple minutes.
All right. Tell me what you learned about school buses this week.
Yeah. I thought the law was if you're on a divided highway, it has a barrier, and the bus is on the other side of the road, and they stop to pick up students, and they got their red flashing lights. If it's a divided highway barrier, you can keep going on the other side. That's the law.
Okay.
But if you're on a four-lane road with only a left turn in the middle of it, that's not a divided highway, and the school bus is stopped, red lights are flashing, you have to stop on the other side. Because I was thinking about it. And I was like, okay, we're on kind of a divided highway. Uh-huh. I thought about going. And I said, no, everybody else is kind of stop, and I'm going to stop here. And just as I did that, some lady came out around me in the left turn lane and rolled up past the bus and turned left behind the bus along with a sheriff with his lights on. So I could just say that. She got the ticket.
Oh, my. So
my
she thought it was okay to pass that bus.
My last second decision to stop save me. And then my other thought was, I was kind of speeding. I wonder if he was following me because I don't know where he came from.
Saved by the lady who doesn't know better.
Yes.
Okay. So yes. Even though it is the second lane of traffic plus the left-hand turn lane plus, you got at least two lanes between you and the bus, you have to stop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This was a four-lane highway with a left turn lane in the middle.
Wow.
You have to stop either side.
So Dave's red car does not get a ticket for speeding today.
No, but the lady in the black SUV got it.
to turn left behind a school bus with the flashing red lights.
Oh, she went past the school bus with the red lights flashing.
Wow. So, I want to take a break. This is a funny story. It's related to how Oregonians can sometimes get too polite. You've even seen that in commercials sometimes when they make fun of Oregonians. So let's come back after the break. We'll talk about left-hand turn lanes and stopping for pedestrians. It's Monday, and this is Brent and Dave on Newsmakers. 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly sponsored by Hamblin's Nursery.
Welcome back, folks. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. We were talking before the break about Dave's traffic lesson and flashing red lights mm-hmm. on a school bus. Luckily, Dave wasn't the one that learned it the hard way.
No.
So, but we wanted somebody who wasn't paying attention to state laws and traffic safety measures to learn it for on our behalf. So that ties into something. And actually, we got a call during the break while we were talking about the floods.
Yes.
Or potential floods. The flood warning.
Yes.
Is, hey, up at Detroit, why are they still pouring water out of the spillway? If we're waters are rising, shouldn't they be withholding that water?
They
should
be.
It's one of the things I don't get. I don't understand.
Yeah.
I recall this back in 1996, the worst floods if we've been here in the 30 years I've been here. And they were still releasing water, and Detroit was not full. So
that kind of defeats the purpose, doesn't it?
Yeah, especially since the number one stated purpose of Army Corps of Engineers managing that is for flood control.
That's what dams are for.
It's not, well, sometimes it's hydropower, right?
Well, no.
But it's also but flood control.
Any dam is for flood control.
So
it's number supposed one, to, it's supposed to be.
Yeah. Number one goal, flood control. And we're all, and Kaiser was flooding and Willamette was flooding stages downtown Salem. And they weren't filling the reservoir.
What?
The only thing I can think of, and somebody, you know, give us a call, 393-1430 if you know a lot more about this than we do, but is that they're trying to retain capacity should it get worse, or retain capacity because they don't want to fill it and then, oh, now we still need to be retaining. I don't know. I really don't know, but maybe.
At this point, it should be closed to keep the water from coming down here and flooding us.
Hold the water back in the reservoir for us, folks, please.
Yes.
So.
And then as it eases up in the next couple of days, then you kind of release the water slowly, not flood us down here.
Very perplexing. We usually like to try to answer questions here on Newsmakers and not pose them, but
we would try.
Maybe we can get somebody from the Army Corps of Engineers who knows, or somebody in the county government that knows why they are continuing to spill water out of, I guess you have to have some water, right, Dave? You gotta have some water so the fish can swim.
Well, of course. Yeah.
So, all right.
That would be the basic thing.
Got on a sidetrack there. So traffic, folks, here's your Newsmakers traffic tips for Monday. It's the left turn lane, folks. I hope you know what I mean when I say that. So you're sitting there, and in front of you is Commercial Street or Kubler Street or Mission Street or anything, that any of those streets that have two lanes of traffic going one way, two lanes of traffic going the other way, and in the middle, there's some real estate, and it's not there for potted plants.
not yet, Brent.
That is a turn lane.
Yes, it is.
Sometimes known as a left turn lane.
Mm-hmm.
So picture yourself sitting there and you want to turn left. And maybe it's Commercial Street. You want to turn left and everybody coming from your left has to clear the way.
Right.
I mean, you can't go yet until those cars, that's clear. You don't have to wait from everybody on the right to clear. That drives me crazy. So I could be sitting there behind a guy and he's waiting for all traffic, all four lanes, both directions to clear before he will turn left.
What?
Onto the road. I'm like,
that makes no sense.
It's prevalent. It's ubiquitous.
Is there a left turn lane signal?
No. No.
You just have to wait for the traffic to clear coming toward you.
That's the way it's supposed to work. So you know how to drive a car.
I do.
So folks, that's your traffic tip. It only has to clear from one side. Both sides. You turn into the traffic, turn lane, and then now you're pointing in the direction of traffic, as that clears, you merge in. It's
right.
A two-step process, folks. Yeah. It's not a one-step swoop, or we never get anywhere. Right? That makes sense?
I
see it all the time.
Yeah.
Don't you get that? Don't you see that?
I do. Yeah, yeah, totally.
Like, why aren't you going?
Did you honk them?
No, I try not to.
I would have honked.
My wife tells me to watch my road rage.
I would have honked.
And the other thing that's similarly connected is people, because we were talking about Oregonians. It was so funny when that insurance commercial made fun of Oregonians.
Pemco?
Yeah. And like, no, you go. No, you go.
You go.
To wait.
Yeah.
All right. So maybe I'm an aggressive driver. I don't think so. But I do think that sometimes it's polite to the point of being unsafe. If you're doing something that no one expects you to do to be nice, That's unsafe, folks.
It is.
So if you're in a flow of traffic and it's going, you know, you're going 40 miles an hour, and then somebody's two blocks up that may look like they might step off the curb at some point, nobody's, and you're three lanes away, they don't expect you to stop.
Mm-mm.
So that's dangerous.
Yes.
It cracks me up. And we have some in Salem, and I like them. They're the flashing yellow lights for pedestrians. So there's one by City Hall, which was sorely needed. There's one by Willamette University. It's great. Except people don't understand that they're not stop signs. They're not stoplights. I've seen people like, well, it's flashing yellow. That was that person who's already turned right onto the sidewalk and he's going to class. You don't have to stop.
No, I mean, you have to slow down is all.
Be cautious.
And keep going.
Look for who might have hit that flash button.
Right.
Right? Make sure there's no bicycles in your blind spot. I get that. But once, if you know who hit that and they're gone, you could go now.
Yes.
Nobody expects you to come to a complete stop when there is no obstacle.
Except for, you know, when they do those pedestrian safety things.
Yeah.
And they have somebody that walks up to the crosswalk and then steps off the curb. They expect all the traffic to come to a screeching halt. And if you don't, a cop comes around the corner and gives you a ticket because you didn't stop.
All right. What if you're on the other side of the street?
Exactly.
See, to me, let's use 12th Street. Right by the university and Tokyo International. It's not a crossing left to right, and they have to go through two lanes plus a median to get to where I am.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's literally unsafe. It's a detriment of traffic for me to come to a screeching halt because somebody's three lanes away.
Right. I get that.
Slow down, make sure it's not coming from this side, take all the precautions, but slamming on the brakes because somebody, and it's tied to, I'm going to ask you.
Okay.
How long do you have to remain a stop? You stopped a pedestrian. How long do you have to remain stopped?
They clear the lane that they're in where you're at and halfway through the other one, I think.
Is that a Dave determination?
Or yes.
Okay.
So I make sure I don't clip them on the way.
All right. Because what I find, because
I think it's another lane.
Are so safe drivers and such, so polite. You sit there and they've already walked in front of the car.
Right.
Then they've gone through the next lane.
Yes.
And they're going through the next lane. I watched this person the other day. They made sure 2.5 lanes away that their both feet went up on the curb before he was willing to continue on in traffic.
And nobody honked him?
No.
Oh, man. I would have.
That's a little overkill.
That is overkill.
He's gone. He's not going to teleport back into your lane.
No. Once they've cleared your lane and halfway through the next lane, you can go.
Folks, you don't have to wait for the pedestrian to be completely up on the sidewalk if they are two lanes away, I don't think. I'm going to get a call from a police officer telling them all. So now you all know how to use the left turn lane. And please
right.
do it. Last thing on left turn lane, and we'll go on to the actual news. Please don't slow down 20 miles an hour before your signal. You ever been on a major boulevard?
Yeah.
You know, and suddenly the flow of traffic's going 45, right? 45. 55 Salem Parkway and or something. And then the person in front of you inexplicably puts on the brakes, but just starts slowing down. And then, they're going to start to merge into the lane, and halfway into the lane, they turn the turn signal on.
Or after the fact.
Yeah. all right, folks, safety-wise, seriously, it's safety. Signal before you change the speed.
Yeah.
You don't drop 20 miles an hour because nobody expects you to do it. That's the whole key of the whole thing.
That's how accidents happen.
Expecting you to do that. If you're going to slow down because you're anticipating merging, going in a left-hand turn lane, going into the right-hand turn lane, whatever it is, you expect, don't drop 10, 20, 30 miles an hour without telling somebody that you're about to do it.
Yeah. My dad likes to drive without the turn signal because here's his reasoning. I know where I'm going. Yeah, but Dad, nobody else knows where you're going. And that causes accidents.
Right.
Yeah.
It is a safety
He didn't
thing.
Get that until I pointed it out. We were driving together somewhere. I was behind him, and I had to anticipate what he was going to do or where he was going to turn. And I'm like, Dad. So we had this big, long conversation afterwards.
Wow.
And yes, you knew where you were going, but I didn't know where you were going because you live here. I had to follow you and anticipate what you were doing. I almost rear-ended him 3 times.
Holy cow.
Because he didn't signal. He just slammed on the brakes to make a right-hand turn or a left-hand turn, and I had no idea where he was going.
All right. Well, you listen to Newsmakers on 1430. This is Brent and Dave. We're going to talk a little bit about the school board race coming up, one of the races. We're going to talk a little bit about the PERS board and the state suing Purdue Pharmaceuticals. We have a little time before the break, so I might as well tell you a funny story. So since we're talking about traffic, and it's a lighthearted Monday. Got to lighten
sure.
the mood.
Got to lighten
with,
it up.
All this gray and all this wet. But funny you should mention that about your dad. So I was dating this girl, and I've been married a long time, as you know, and I was dating this girl, and she was following me. I was driving a motorcycle at the time. I was in my 20s. And so we're going over to this friend's house, and so we're driving down the street, and the light turns yellow.
Mm-hmm.
So I hit the brakes to stop.
Oh, you're one of those?
Yes, I hit the brakes to stop before the stop. Well, guess what? The young lady in the car behind me, my
stepped
friend,
on the gas.
My girlfriend was behind me.
Yeah,
she stepped on the gas.
Yeah,
she's like, "Oh, let's go through."
That's guess what who? Yellow means, yes. buddy.
prepare to stop. Is that me? No,
hit no. The gas. It's if you're too close to it, you accelerate it through.
All right, so I'm on a motorcycle. My girlfriend's in a car.
Yes,
and the light turns yellow, and she's following me. I hit the brakes. She hits the gas. Guess who went up in the middle of the intersection with a total motorcycle?
You did.
I certainly did. Yes. So,
are you walking with a limp still?
No. I was young then, so we bounced.
Oh, you bounced back. Okay.
Like, some sprained wrists.
Wow.
And, yeah. So the humorous part of the story is, you know who that young woman was? That would be my wife.
Wow.
Yep. That would be the woman I married, devoted now 29 years in a couple of months.
She felt sorry that she hit you.
I figured she owed me for life now.
All right.
So who else am I going to marry? You know, how could I possibly marry somebody who tried to kill me?
Right?
It's like, okay. Sorry, honey, sorry I just told that on the air, but it is a great story.
And, that is a pretty good story.
Stuck with her. And yeah, traffic safety story and humorous. But yes.
Yeah.
My wife tried to run me down. And she was driving a Camaro. The funny thing is when we did get married and she sold this brown Camaro. On the day that we sold it, it still had the paint scratches from my license plate.
Wow.
Where my license plate on the motorcycle had made its mark on the hood of her car. It was still there on the day we sold her car. Like, there's the mark where you hit me and threw me into the intersection.
Jeez.
And then I jump up and I drag my motorcycle out of the intersection. And my wife, of course, has stopped. She got in the car and she's, "Oh my gosh, you know, are you okay? Okay." And we're on the corner, street corner, and I give her a hug. I'm like, "Are you okay?" And this other guy who was a witness the whole thing, he goes, "You know her?" Yes, I do. All right, stick with us. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. We're going to come back. So stick with us on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Green Acres Landscape.
Welcome back, folks. This is Brent DeHart on this beautiful, non-sunshiny Monday. We're having some fun here today on Newsmakers, and we've got a great week coming up with a county commissioner, a state representative, and a former gubernatorial candidate coming into the studio, so it's going to be a great week. So let's get to some of the news items, and also we've got Hunter here in the studio that did some research on a pedestrian thing maybe we'll circle back to. School board, Marty Hyen. Marty, I'm going to apologize right now if it's Hyen, and I've tried, I remember I've heard you speak, and... I think
excuse
it's,
me.
Hi,
wow.
Marty. She's running for a second term of the school board, Salem-Keizer Schools. She was elected in 2015. She has an opponent. Want everybody to be aware of who the candidates are. We don't do a lot of candidate. We certainly don't do a lot of candidate comparison on Newsmakers, but we might. We might find that's worthwhile to have them both in.
We might delve into that.
Yeah. So her opponent is Raul Marquez. He's a 2018 McKay graduate, so a young man. And Marty, she's retired. She was an IT worker. She wants to continue doing what they are doing, thinks they're doing some good work in terms of the vocational school, of course, graduation, and addressing bullying in schools, which we have to. And Honestly, Dave, I got to tell you, I've had friends that have issues with bullying, and sometimes the administrators at the schools do exactly the opposite of what their no tolerance says they're supposed to be.
What?
Yeah, I've seen it happen. I've seen videos of it happen in this day and age of cell phones and this and that, of someone flat out getting bullied.
Right.
But the kids were the good kids or the prominent kids or, you know, what have you. And that zero tolerance thing went out the window. So it's a concern. Bullying in schools, graduation rates, which are growing, but still overall has a lot of work to do. And, of course, career tech. So those are some easy things to cherry pick. You can't argue against some of those things.
What do you think the low graduation rate is caused by? Just, I thought I'd toss it out there.
Why don't we get Christy Perry, the superintendent, on the show? We'll ask her.
Yeah, because was she on before?
She has not been on.
Okay.
No, we've invited her.
We've had other people talk about that, though, and the graduation rates. I'm still not comprehending why it's so low.
Yeah, and you know, we don't see it. Some of these things are cultural, right? And some families are just all about education, sometimes to the detriment. Sometimes it's only education. But it really, to me, since you asked me, and you're trying to get me in trouble, Dave.
I am, but, you know.
It does start in the home. If the expectation is from the day that you learn to talk that you will learn to read and you will go to school and you get a high school diploma, you know, that's the first step. We need to culturally acknowledge that it's important, and it's important for the kids, and it might break a cycle of poverty. It might catapult all new opportunities for generations of the family. Get your education.
Never once in all my years did I ever consider dropping out of school, ever.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause hard work pays off. I learned that early.
Well, poverty plays into it. Homelessness plays into it. So there's some social drivers, but come on. It's not that hard to get out of high school. It's really not that hard.
How does the poverty play into it? Because school's free.
Because if the parents are not home because they both have to work.
Okay.
You know, there's less supervision. There's less opportunity for modeling. There's, frankly, if you have a home where both parents are working and maybe they're working multiple shifts and so on and so forth, and maybe they didn't graduate themselves, then you do not have the expectation set. There's a great study, goes way, way back, and I always remember how important it was as far as output for a student and a child was incredibly influenced by the level of expectation.
Okay.
So, and it's a great lesson for teachers, and I'm sure they've all been taught it more than one time and somewhere along their training, but where you have an example of where I'm not expecting much out of this kid, well, you know what you're not going to get? You're not going to get much.
Yeah.
But if you see a kid and you automatically set high expectations because you believe them to be talented and gifted, or you believe them to be blah, 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 then the higher the expectation, the higher they perform. Well, it starts in the home. The home expectation is you will do this and you will graduate from high school and you will get grades. Blah, blah, blah. So poverty also will play into it. Because actually, I've had employees who literally had to work during high school to help pay the household bills.
Okay.
So, young man, high school person, high school student said, "Hey, when do we get paid? Our electricity got turned off."
Oh, wow.
Right. So, distractions. It takes them away from school.
Yeah, I could see
They're just fighting for family survival. So, all of those things interconnect. But
So, that would explain why a certain Mr. Johnson was really tough on me then.
Could be.
I mean, I liked him as a teacher. He was a great teacher, but man, he was tough on me.
Because he expected a lot of
almost to the point I almost hated him. But I respected him because he was so tough on me. And he made me a better student.
Interesting. All right.
But boy, did it, yeah.
Expectations.
There was a few times I cursed his name.
Language barriers?
He's my friend today, though.
Is he?
Yeah.
That's very cool. We'll have to have him on the show to tell us what Dave Bourne was like as troublemaker juvenile.
I wonder if he would do that.
All right, back to the school board. Raul Marquez. He graduated in 2018, so it was just last year he graduated from high school.
Okay.
So he'd like to bring the perspective of a Latino graduate and the youth. And so, McKay is the most diverse school in the district.
Okay.
So, yeah, and I'm a big fan of having differing perspectives and life views and experiences on the school board. You know, I certainly got that when I was serving on city council, and there was all sorts of different types of makeups of people's backgrounds. So there were men and there were women, and there were state workers, there were entrepreneurs, there were high-tech people, there were consultants, and it was kind of all a mix. And we all benefited from learning from and deferring to the expertise and the passion of the different person. So, all right, go for it, Raul. Congratulations. Talk about an expectation. Somebody set an expectation to serve and to set an example for this young man who may be 18, right?
Wow.
If he's just graduated last year.
Yeah, 18, exactly. 19,
maybe. So, anyway, it's another school board up for a vote, school board race. We'd like to talk also maybe later about the Kaiser race. We have another contested race with a couple of people who are both very active. So we'll talk about that on another day. But if you want any information on that, hey, there's an article in the Salem Reporter, of course, and I'm sure Marty Hyen has a, and Raul should have websites for their efforts. So anyway, re-election to the school board. I admire that because it's you can make a lot of enemies that way, and it's a lot of work, and you don't get a lot of thanks.
Do you get any pay?
No. Nope, that's a volunteer position as well.
Ooh.
Yeah, you can put in a lot of hours and be on the school board, and you have to make tough decisions, like the recent redistricting. Parents are calling and screaming and saying, I don't want my kid to move. And
right.
Like, well, we're gonna move the line.
What's the incentive to run then? Seriously.
Yeah, service.
Why would you put yourself through that?
Because you want to help. Because you think you have ideas that'll help accomplish the mission. It's just, it's servanthood, really. Unless, you know, someone's trying to build a political resume or what have you. But I think mostly they're interested in education. They're in education in the community. And they think I have something to offer.
Okay.
Right? I thought about it at one time. There was a shortage back in the 90s and people were not filing to run. I think I read a Statesman Journal article that said, no one has filed, and the filing deadline is like next week. And I thought, well, I can't have nobody run. So I seriously considered running for school board at the time, and I was a pretty young man at the time.
Did you?
I wasn't as young as Raul.
Did you?
I did not.
Okay.
Actually, I think I filed to run and then withdrew, and like three other people looked around like, you guys, you're all good. I don't need to run.
Oh, well, there
the,
you go.
The need was just not there.
Interesting.
But I was willing to serve if need be.
So that's the true definition of serving. Like for the school board.
Yeah. So for me, if I were, because I was, if I were governor, we're going to do a whole show on Brent, what Governor Brandt would do.
Okay.
But for the school board, to me, one of the greatest barriers, and I worry about the, when we're talking about the Latino population.
Okay.
I think the greatest one, I'm sure some people will argue with me. I think one of the greatest barriers is the language barrier. And if we really want to set them up for success and integration with the governance, with economic opportunity, with job opportunity, we have to absolutely make sure they're graduating from high school completely fluent in English.
Yes.
I like, and I had this argument with a previous superintendent of schools, I like the immersion. I like get them 100% fluent in English and then mainstream them. And don't do halfway, so they're not extremely well gifted in reading and writing in their native language, extremely well gifted in English, but make sure they get out of high school and mainstream them when they're fluent in English.
Mm-hmm.
So I like the immersion tactic. That's the way I would want to learn. But I also think it's the biggest favor we can do for immigrants who are coming to America that don't speak the language from wherever they are, if they plan on staying.
Yep.
That's the local news is in this. Our newspapers in English. Our laws are written in English and so forth. And I just think, you know, and that's someone's going to accuse me of being a racist or a xenophobe or things like, no, actually, I think the best thing we can do for them for their success is to make sure that they can integrate with the language and take full opportunity to like Raul is. I mean, he's running for public office.
Right.
And also opportunity in all of the economic opportunity America has.
Absolutely.
If you don't know the language of the land, I can't imagine moving to Zaire and expecting to make it if I don't speak some of the local language.
Yeah.
Right?
That's a true fact.
So that would be something that people are passionate
gonna,
about.
They're not going to coddle you there, that's for sure.
So it might be graduation rates. It might be social services. It might be testing scores, standardized testing.
Driver's test, hello.
All of these things. So a lot of things we do culturally in schools that we did not do a couple generations ago.
Although I saw the driver's test, not just in English anymore.
Oh, no. No, it's in many languages.
Many languages.
They should at least be able to read the street signs, though.
Well, yes, those are not universal, I don't think. Are they? No. No,
some of them.
Stop signs are.
Yeah, you got like killer owl up ahead.
Red lights. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. You're listening to Newsmakers on this beautiful Monday. We're going to talk about Ellen Rosenblum. She's our attorney general and why she's suing Purdue Pharmaceuticals. And yeah, the answer I pose myself to, who's on that purse board? So stick with us. You're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center.
Welcome back, folks. This is Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. And as promised, Hunter came up with some information for us. So you know, the answer to the question posed in an earlier segment was, if the pedestrian steps off the curb, you will stop. It doesn't matter if they're on the other side of the street or your side of the street. If it steps off the curb, you get to stop. Secondarily, if the pedestrian passes you, they need to clear your lane and the lane next to you before you're free to pursue, proceed.
I was only giving him half a lane, so.
Only half?
Yeah.
Because they might turn around and dive in front of your car.
They might, yeah.
So we got that right, Hunter. So thank you for that research. So if they've passed you, everyone, and they've passed the lane next to you, it's okay.
So
you
even a four-lane Lancaster, you got to stop when they're on the other side of the road?
Apparently so. Yeah.
Really?
Hunter. Yep, both directions. We were talking about that, about the danger of slamming on your brakes when nobody sees the risk.
The other pedestrian, yeah. Too, yeah.
So there's also a rule that if you know, you always, this is just common sense, folks, but if everyone's stopped but your lane's not stopped, slow down and stop because there's something happening.
You're right.
There's a child in there. There's a dog in the road. Something's happening, but there's a hazard. You don't go, oh, I wonder why all the lanes are stopped, but my lane's free, and just barrel through it. But all right, a couple things. We talked last week about the initiatives to reform PERS and former Governor Kulongowski's efforts on that. I wanted to explain what the two initiatives are, and these would go to the ballot for us to vote on. One is it protects the pension benefits for the retired workers. So the retired workers, you know, they're protected and so forth. But it requires employees who are enrolled into the pension now to contribute one-third of the going-forward cost of the future benefits.
That's a good thing.
So that's a way to get more money into the system and have people start to contribute to their own retirement.
I never understood why they were not. We talked about that, though.
Collective bargaining.
Yeah, we talked about that in the last week.
Compromises.
But still,
it goes back for decades.
And makes no sense.
And then it gets to who gets to vote on the PERS board.
Yeah, who is that?
We'll get there.
Okay.
The other initiative establishes a 401k-style individual retirement savings plan for new hires.
So that's good.
It's an alternative to the traditional PERS pension plan. So anytime you have to fund something that pays a check in perpetuity, that's very expensive. And you have to plan for a life expectancy, and you have to have reserves, and you have to have, you know, and you have to have returns on the money that's been invested, and so on and so forth. So they could replace, and even though the PERS for new hires now is nowhere like what it is for tier one, we've reformed that and bled it down two times.
Wow.
We have tier two, and now the new offering, and it's not even it PERS by any stretch of the imagination of what they used to be, but we could further refine it according to this one initiative to just basically make it like a 401k plan.
Which it should have been in the first place.
Yeah. So it maintains all the earned benefits they already have to date, right? And the existence of where they have the 6% of salary contributions and so forth. So everything that they've had up till now, they've earned and they get to keep, but then it's going to transition going forward to a 401k more like style.
That makes sense.
There'll be a lot of education on that to follow, but we just hit a highlight on that last week, saying that they're out there. Maybe Ted Kulongoski would like to come on the show and talk about them.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. All right. And also OxyContin.
Oh, wait. You're going to get to the PERS. Who's on the PERS
oh,
board?
Oh, yeah. I was going to leave it hanging with
geez.
Tonight. Jeez. Jeez.
Don't do that.
Okay. I have this. Boink. I have this. How did I do that?
Oh, no.
Did he lose it?
I hope not. You teased this all show long. You're talking about the PERS. I want to know who's on the PERS board that's been making the decisions.
Well, I know. Well, let me give you what I call. I had the exact language here in front of me. I lost it. So there's a 5-member board.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And 3 have to have management and experience, and they have to be private sector.
Okay.
So you do have a majority of votes. We'll give them that. And then basically there's 2 people who are on PERS. One is in a management position or an elected position.
Okay.
So somebody who's not a member of a collective bargaining agreement. And the 5th member is a member who is a PERS recipient who is a member of a collective bargaining agreement.
Wow.
So you have the government or the government sector union member representative, the management or elected member. So you could have, you know, the mayor Portland on, right? And then 3 people that have money management, business management, and so forth kind of experience from the private sector. So you don't have 3 people and 3 votes that are just going to ram that kind of majority through. However, it still begs the question, if it affects their pocketbook, how is it not a conflict of interest? In a state that really, really, you know, has these, and we've talked about in previous shows how, as a city councilor, I needed to declare everybody I was related to in the entire state and where they lived to make sure that nobody in my extended family might be in a position to do business with. And I live in Salem. And if I had relatives in Southern Oregon, Southeast Oregon, it's like they don't need to know where they live. But that's how deep our protections are against having these conflicts of interest. Yet,
is it written in there that they have to have at least 1 representative who is on PERS in there?
Yep.
Okay. Well, that explains
that's how
that.
It's specified.
Well, that's how we
2 people that are on PERS. But the question is, why isn't anybody challenging that?
Because it's written
absolutely
in.
I know, but it should be unconstitutional.
It,
you know,
it should be
changed by the legislature. So there's not. I mean, it's bad enough when you have an appearance of conflict of interest, like, say, the governor taking campaign contributions from companies who are doing business with the state that she runs. There is an apparent, there's an appearance that there might be a problem there.
Yeah, right.
Actually, I think that's directly a conflict there. But anyway, same thing on this. If they're going to have a conflict of interest, that just they should not. They're the same board that voted not to update the mortality tables. They're the same board that updated to continue to provide the 8%. And all of these things all along the way that got us to this problem.
So how come the majority that are not invested in that didn't overrule them?
Good question.
Don't understand that. We have about 10 seconds.
10 seconds. All right. We can't get to the next thing. Well, maybe to talk about the lawsuit next time. But remember, the rest of the week is going to be incredible. Make sure to tune in so we can hear Bud Pierce. We can hear Denise Bowles. And tomorrow, County Commissioner. All right. Stick with us. This is Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN, Salem's
Lynn
Listening.
Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.